Tapatakam lang Sri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupang Sagrajatang Sahagana Raghunatha Nutang Tang Sajivang Sa Advaitang Sa Avadhutang Parijana Sahitang Krishna Chaitanya Devang Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Karana Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Puripre Vancha Kalpatrubhyashta Kapasan Hubhya Evacha Putitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna. I like these prayers, Bande Hum. The first time I saw Srila Prabhupada, he sang those prayers. I thought, this is amazing. I hope it's not all in this foreign language. So I'll just give a little sort of introduction. Rupalas and I. Rupalas Prabhu, his expertise for many years, actually, maybe 25 odd years, has been the acharyas, our previous acharyas, our Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati Thakur, and you can see the list, of course, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhaktivinod Thakur, and Jagannathas Babaji. So this book, this one in my right hand, is Without Fear. He published this maybe a year or two ago, 2 years, I think. And many devotees have this book already, Without Fear. This is about Prabhupada, very wonderfully researched. And this really is the focus of Rupa Vilas Prabhu. And this one, more recently, Babaji Maharaj. Now, Babaji Maharaj is about two Maharajas. It says Babaji Maharaj 2, Beyond Duality. So this is Gaurakishore Das Babaji and Srila Jagannath Das Babaji. So we recommend you, as Rupa Vilas speaks, you will hear about his realizations, his recommendations. So, and I'm speaking on something completely different. Now, I'm just going to introduce this briefly. Well, let me say, first of all, I just finished this book. This is published by Maya Priya. And also, these books are published by Maya Priya as well. She has a press called bookrights.com. This is the advertisement portion of the class. Bookrights Press. And this is called The Perfect Society, Daiva Varnashrama. So this is about Varnashrama, which I'll discuss Varnashrama tomorrow morning. At what time is class? 3 o'clock in the morning? So this is the book, this is what I'm going to be discussing just for a few minutes. I'm not going to spend a long time. This is an odd cover. Maya Priya told me that she didn't like it, but I'm distributing it anyway. This book is free. I'm handing this out for free, but you have to promise to read it, and you should also have an interest in the topic. The topic is Vedic culture and the environment. And it's a little different approach than many of you are used to. It's designed to be read by an agnostic person, not necessarily a devotee, a young agnostic who is interested, or better yet, somebody who's interested in God, but at minimum, an agnostic who is interested in the environment. People under 30 tend to either be involved in some environmental cause, or they are very interested in it. People who are advanced in age, 40, 50, 60, 70, they don't care at all. They're just going to die. They don't care about the environment. So you have to excuse me. Rupa Vilas is always telling me, Dayananda, don't speak in hyperbole. So please excuse my hyperbole. So I just want to mention a few things about this. I've been working on Vedic culture or Krishna consciousness and the environment for about nearly 20 years, and I've been writing about it for about 7 years. So I've done a lot of research and a lot of sort of thought about it. A lot of thought has gone into it. This is very brief. It has end notes, but if you don't read the end notes, it's about a 1 hour read. It's about 100 pages, so it's quite digestible. Now I'm going to explain two or three concepts. I think I divided it into four sections, and I'll just mention maybe a couple of the sections without really covering them. The first is that I establish the problem, the basic problem within the environment, in our human relationship with nature, is overconsumption. So there are many problems that may arise that are symptoms, like climate change or depletion of natural resources or there may be species annihilation. Some people, some scientists are such alarmists that they say that there's going to be a sixth major extinction, that they have somehow tracked five previous extinctions, like the dinosaurs or like some major extinctions in which many species die off and only a few are left. So they say that there's going to be a sixth one and it's going to be caused by humans. I'm just saying this to illustrate the fact that that there's currently a lot of alarm about human relations with nature or with the environment. This book is called The Solution to Society's Imbalance with Nature. So beginning with overconsumption, this I present as the basic problem. Now, excuse me. Now, in terms of our Krishna consciousness philosophy, Vedanta philosophy, overconsumption is lust or greed. I meant to say greed. And it's also desire. It's like we say, dhyayato vishayan pungsak sangha stechu pujayate. Sangat sangjayati kama. So kama means desire. Kama doesn't just mean desire for sex. It means desire for things. We want to contact the senses with the sense objects. It's our problem in life. It's Vedanta, all philosophies, Mayavadi, personalism, yoga, all these different philosophies, they identify the problem, and other religions in their various ways identify this as the problem. So overconsumption, this is the problem, and we no longer have any strong religions, especially in the West, to prevent us, to prevent society from greed. The second point is that I present Vedic culture juxtaposed with modern global culture. So in this concept of presentation, so I draw on Prabhupada's discussion with Professor Katovsky. Professor Katovsky said, how many disciples do you have? And Prabhupada said, oh, in India, there are millions and millions, and indicating that it's not a question of just a few people. So I choose not to present that this is ISKCON or Vedic culture in the sense of ISKCON or even Vedic culture in some kind of ideal, like in Nanda Maharaj's time in Vrindavan. Although Prabhupada does sometimes refer to that ideal. But in line with his preaching to Professor Katosky in Russia, I say that Vedic culture is 1 billion people. And those billion are using, they're consuming much less than those in modern global culture. So then part of the book is, maybe a third of it, is an analysis of the various aspects of modern global culture. What are these different aspects, and how do they affect the society's relationship with nature? Are these major components, science, democracy, humanism, socialism, capitalism, how are these affecting society's relationship with nature? Are they preventing society from overconsuming, or are they contributing, or are they neutral? What are they doing? Then I discuss Vedic culture. So this is what I'm going to finish with. 4 items I identify in Vedic culture. One is spirit soul, sankirtan, varna, and ashrama. So this is in devotee language. I don't use that kind of language here. Sounds kind of funny. I don't use that kind of language here. So the first one, spirit soul. So I present it as all souls are equal, or the life force is equal in all beings. Now there's a famous professor, Lynn White, in the late 60s. He published a wonderful article. Tripurari Maharaj agreed with me that we both kind of like this article. That he says that Christianity, although this man was a Christian, he said that it was unfortunate that Christianity really suppressed all of these societies that were animist societies. Animism meaning that the society sees the soul in nature. So we're, Hare Krishna, I didn't recognize you, Prabhu. Nice to see you. Obeisances. So in animist societies, and to a large degree, Vedantic society is or Vedic society is animist society, soul in nature, soul in all beings. So this Lynn White says that seeing that nature has a spirit soul, it creates a barrier. Obviously, all societies there's greed, there's negative aspects in all society. But this barrier, he says, exists between humans and nature. So I present this concept. That's one, that all souls are equal. 2, sankirtan. Although I say celebration of leelas and names. So this culture, this Vedic culture, is really, you can say it's leela culture. I mean, just think about it, leela culture. In worship, in all temples, the deities represent some leela. There's Ram, Ram Leela. So the temple is a Ram temple. Temple is a Vishnu temple. You see temples in South India. Vishnu is lying down. Well, Narayana with Brahma coming out from his navel. That's a Leela that's described in Bhagavatam, that creation is also Leela. Then Krishna, you look on the walls, you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Leela of Mahaprabhu in Jharikhand forest. So all these different Leelas, what is this? I can't see. But Krishna is in the far back. Yes, so Leela. So this is our culture, Leela. And Mahaprabhu, of course, emphasized names, that the holy name of Krishna. But Mahaprabhu also celebrated the Leelas. Rathyatra is a Leela, celebration of a Leela. And Mahaprabhu would fall in ecstasy or go in the ocean, or, you know, so many pastimes with Mahaprabhu regarding leelas. So it's really a leela culture. And you can even look beyond Vaishnava influence. Shiva, there's so many leelas, leela culture. And of course now the politicians, they kind of want to minimize some of these festivals, but the traditional festivals celebrate leelas. And the deities are taken out on procession outside of many temples. Prabhupada wanted us to do that, to celebrate leelas. Now the beauty of leela, one of the things about leela, and important, well, I'll say two, just very briefly. Leela provides enjoyment. So people want to go to the mall or order something on Amazon. They want things to provide them enjoyment. This is how people in this culture, in this society, and it's not just America now, it's spread all over the world. It's a kind of global culture. They want things, and this is overconsumption. This is, all these things are destroying the environment. So what I'm not suggesting that this is an environmental movement. This is a Vedic movement. But this is a way to say that our society is better than your society. It's a way to convince people that they should engage in a social movement. Prabhupada's, what is that verse? Is Pushkar here? I was told that Pushkar knows all verses. So there's that verse that Prabhupada quotes at the beginning of the Bhagavatam about, you know, even though it's imperfectly composed, the names the Bhagavatam will. Yes, exactly. Perfect, perfect. The phrase I'm looking for is will something like purify the hearts of the, what is that? Can you remember? Anyway, so the idea is that this Krishna consciousness is not just in an individual, something individual for your yoga benefit or to relieve your anxiety or to personally connect you with Krishna. Yes, it's all those things. But Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada indicates that it's for the benefit of society. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, para upakar, to benefit everyone. So this, that's another thing I do.
Yeah.
I poke people next to me. Okay, I'll put my hand here and just wave this. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. So, excellent. Thank you very much. Bring about a revolution in the impious lives of, sorry? This world's misdirected civilization. So this indicates a social revolution. And it indicates, or cultural, it goes beyond just individual. This is something we want to give to everyone. And para upakar, Prabhupada used the words para upakar in two contexts. One, sankirtan is para upakar. That's for everyone. Another is varnashram is para upakar. That's also for everyone. So we'll talk about varnashram tomorrow morning. So that's two. That's the one I emphasize the most. Celebration, first one, all souls are equal. Number two, celebration of Krishna's leelas and namas, which in our terms translates as sankirtan. And this provides, one, enjoyment that counteracts the enjoyment of connecting the senses with the sense objects, or overconsumption, if you will. It's also yajna, which is a whole different topic that Rupa knows I could speak for hours on that. Number three is Varna. So the way I present Varna is an agrarian economy. It's essential to return to an agrarian economy. And number four is ashrama. And the way I present that is tolerance of nature. Modern culture has no tolerance for nature. Modern culture is either interested in exploiting nature or fighting with nature. Those are, in general, those are the two basic themes in modern culture. Very important themes. Exploit or fight. And in Vedic culture, everywhere you see tolerance of nature. Matra sparsha sukante ashitoshan sukha dukkada agma apayano nityas thangs titikshasva bharata. Titikshasva is Krishna's command to Arjuna. It's in the imperative case. Titikshasva. Tolerate all these things. Shita, ushna, summer, winter, the momentary contact of the sun. And what happens? Yang hina vyatyantyate. Vyatyantyate. Purushang purusharshabha. Samadhukha sukhang dhirang. Sa amritat baya kalpate. That person is eligible for liberation. So this is really a major theme. And that's the fourth item that I present in as a barrier against destroying nature and as a path to transcend our desire to destroy nature. I'll say again, one, all souls are equal. Two, sankirtan or celebration of Krishna's lilas and namas. Three, varna, which is I'm presenting as agrarian economy. Four is ashrama, which I'm presenting, you know, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. It's basically, what's the purpose? The purpose is to become detached from spiritual life. And here I'm speaking with such gravity and authority, and I make such a slip, you know, it's... What can I do? Now you've discovered me. So become detached from material life and attached to spiritual life. So this is the four ashramas. And now it's Rupa Vilas's turn to speak about the acharyas. Rupa Vilas is an acharya on the acharyas.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Okay. Well, the last time I was here, I think it was about 20 years ago. It's a beautiful sight to be in this temple and see these beautifully decorated deities, and it sort of invokes, you know, New Raman Reddy, it invokes Vrindavan, especially when I see Krishna Balaram, that's very moving. And anyway, my talk won't probably last very long, but also I think I know many of you, but if you think I've probably forgotten most of your names. So please don't assume I know who you are. Because my memory is, we've started this tour and we've dubbed it the 79ers tour, because we're both 79. So, you know, we figured we better get out while we still can. And but it's really been great wherever we've gone. We started in Virginia, then we moved to North Carolina, then Atlanta, and then finally we're here, and we've had a tremendous reception and very kind treatment. So I doubt that it'll be any different. I hope it'll be. Please don't throw any rocks or anything. Anyway, what I just wanted to say briefly is I started in about 1987. So now that I'm thinking. So it's only about 40 years I've been working on this Acharya project. Sometimes I think it's 30, but no, it's more like 40. And some of these books, like for instance, this one that I'm kind of enthusiastic about, Babaji Maharaj. It was originally published quite a few years ago, 1990, I think it was published originally. But that book was published under somebody else's name. Well, I won't go into the history of why that is, but it was my book. And so when I had a chance to look at it again and gather more material and more nectar, I was able to do that. So now the book is about twice as long as it was. A lot more information, especially about the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur towards his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And it's just stunning the way he speaks of him with so much humility and appreciation. So anyway, that's my present enthusiasm. But just in general, I just wanted to say this. I was talking to an English friend of mine. I'm living in near London right now. And we had a kind of interesting conversation. He was talking to a prominent sannyasi who felt that the way that you establish a relationship with Prabhupada is through his books. Well, it sounds good. But his point was, no. He said, that's not how he developed. He developed his appreciation for Prabhupada first by reading the Lilamrita. And as you know, I mean, Without Fear is just one, but there's so many now. There's Lilamrita, there's, you know, Shyamasundara's latest book, Chasing Rhinos, then there's Mukunda Maharaj's book, Miracle on Second. There's so many out there now. And I couldn't possibly name them all. But the point is, he felt that without getting to really know who Prabhupada is, you can't truly appreciate his books without knowing the person that put them together. And I think that to understand the compassion and the sacrifice and the desire of Srila Prabhupada as was expressed in all these books, then it's able to enter into his writing more in a greater depth. Once you know, because we've Prabhupada has been finally acknowledged, not so recently, but fairly recently, as the Siksha Guru of the society. That means everyone's Siksha Guru. So, but what do some newer people, they don't know much about Prabhupada. And I think that also there's a great lack of knowledge about the lineage of our parampara. Without knowing what we're connected to for so many hundreds of years, or even thousands of years, to know what sort of personalities they are. And that's the kind of my aim in writing these books, is to kind of just bring out as much information as I can find about the personalities, the characteristics, the sacrifice, the humility, and the compassion of these persons in reaching out to the world. You know, some people don't know, for instance, that why was Bhaktivinoda so interested in starting this Nam Hatha program? That was due to the influence of Jagannath Das Babaji. He was so impressed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur's enthusiasm to talk about chanting that he suggested, why don't you go everywhere and just gather people together and form, you know, groups in which chanting becomes the prominent activity. And so that was one of the reasons that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is really the kind of the source of the revival of this Krishna consciousness movement. And they kind of did everything. And then Bhaktisiddhanta, for instance, he performed incredible vows, chanting vows, a billion names within 10 years. Now, he never would have done that, according to his own account, without the influence of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. So knowing these persons and knowing the history of our sampradaya I think it's important to appreciate and to actually understand more what incredible personalities they were, how powerful and amazing they are, and with that kind of knowledge, develop a bit of a relationship I guess my theme is lineage, the lineage of our parampara. So many amazing personalities. And so that's basically, you know, like people tend to have their niche, some kind of a little one area they can do something. Some people, it's, you know, spreading this movement all over the world, and they're the real heroes, but we have to find some way we can be of service. So I'm trying to be of service in this way, and I hope that you'll, if you get a chance to take some of these books with you, that would be great. Aside from that, I don't really have a lot more to say. I think if there are any questions, or if anyone just wants to hear something, some stories about Prabhupada, that we're willing to do that also. Any questions at
yes,
all?
Yes, here, just a second.
Go ahead, he's gonna need, yeah.
Thank you for that. I was just wondering, you mentioned finding this information, and you didn't elaborate on that. I mean, most of this is pre-digital, et cetera. So could you speak something about what that means, finding? And are you also doing any recording of that adventure of finding this information?
Recording? I'm not sure about recording. The way I found the information, everything begins, at least for me, everything begins with obsession. In other words, I became obsessed in learning about them. In the early Back to Godheads that were published about the time I joined, there were articles by Bhaktisiddhanta that nobody could practically understand even. There were articles by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There were articles about Haridas Thakur. And I just got really fascinated trying to understand the lineage of our parampara. So when I was living in India, I was living in Vrindavan for about 11 years, and I just started being on the lookout all the time for books, articles, sometimes recordings. And gradually, over the course of now 40 years of effort, I just have been fortunate to run into lots of information, which I footnote everything in these books. So if you want to know what all the sources were and where I got it, it's there. But I really think that the most, I don't consider myself particularly successful, but I think a lot of successful people only become successful because they become obsessed. They become obsessed with something, you know, whether it's a musician or an actor or a writer or a philosopher. They develop some kind of, they can't stop thinking about certain things. Like now, Dayanand is my oldest friend. We've been friends for more than 50 years. And he's the one I learned that from. That if you want to really understand something, become a little obsessed with it. I know Adi Dave is a fantastic artist. And, you know, he became obsessed also. Isn't it? Didn't you? Would you mind just saying that again?
Prabhupada found that spark in all of us, and he knew how to fan it to increase that obsession by serving the Supreme.
Yeah. So I think there's somebody got their hand up over there. I hope I answered your question, but yeah, okay.
Well, because you volunteered that, we can tell Prabhupada stories. I know that Dayananda and his then wife opened the very first temple in L.A., and I'm sure many of the devotees here don't know much about it, and you can share some. I think the one Rupa Vilas Prabhu story that I know is on the roof of the Gurukula or in Vrindavan, something about a asana. Was that you?
Oh, yeah, it's a little bit different, but I'll tell it. I'll tell that story if you want.
Yeah, please.
Now, he has a lot better stories than I do, but most of my stories have to do with making an idiot of myself. So Well, this one kind of does, but it's kind of funny. Well, when I was in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was, he was giving darshan and talking to so many people. And I wanted to get in there, you know, but I didn't get much chance to get in there because there's always somebody with a danda guarding the gates to his quarters. You know, like Jayan Vijay or something, you know, I mean, it was like hard to get in to see Prabhupada unless...
His name starts with B for Brahmananda.
Yeah. he was often the one blocking the gates. So I made friends with Bhagaji, who was Prabhupada's friend, a Vrijvasi, friend of Prabhupada. And I said, can I go in with you? Get me past the, you know, Brahmananda. So... He said, yeah, come on. So as we went in, Brahmananda was giving me the eye, and Bhagavad said, now he's with me. So we walked in, and Prabhupada was in his garden. There was a big lotus pond. It's still there, I think. And he was sitting on his asana, and there's some guests there. And as soon as I made an appearance just outside the door to the outside, Prabhupada spotted me, and as these guests were getting up to go, and Prabhupada spotted me immediately, he said, go and get them some prasadam. So I thought, oh. So I ran back inside and found Hari Sarai. I said, Prabhupada says, yeah, to give the guests some prasadam. He said, yeah, there's leaf cups of prasadam over there. And so I went and got the leaf cups, gave them to the guests. See, I had gone in with an idea that really enjoy Prabhupada's association. But it didn't, well, you'll see how it worked out. So then I went back, you know, gave him the prasadam, went back to go inside the garden again. And Prabhupada said, go and get some asanas. Already I was beginning to get frayed. So I said, where should I get them? And Prabhupada said, ask Hari Sarai. So then I went in, Hari Sarai, Prabhupada wants asanas. He said, well, I don't know if we have any. So he was rummaging around in this closet, and he finally found one asana, and it was all tattered. It didn't look good. So he gave it to me. He said, here. So I went back out. Then Prabhupada immediately spotted me again. He said, I've several times asked you to get some asanas. What is the difficulty? I said, well, they only had this one. And then he just looked at me. And then, so I was just standing there holding this asana, and I said, and this is, you know, it's like fate sometimes. You know you're going to make a fool of yourself, but you do it anyway. So I held up this asana and said, Prabhupada, what should I do with this asana? He said, take your one asana and sit down. And then he and Bhagaji started laughing uproariously. You know, they just thought it was hilarious. And then I started laughing, and I was thinking, well, what am I laughing about? You know? But I think that the point of this story is, I had gone in with the mood of trying to enjoy Prabhupada's association, not as a servant. And Prabhupada immediately ascertained why I was there and immediately engaged me as a servant. And I was lousy at it. That was my realization. It never occurred to me at the time, why don't you go down to Loy Bazaar and get some asanas and bring them back? No, it never occurred to me. That's what it's like to be a neophyte. So now let Dayananda speak. Okay. Move it? You want to move it? You seem to be the one who knows how.
So, Lasanja, you can read Mukundas in the, I think it's, is it Miracle on Second Avenue, or is it another one? He talks about Los Angeles also in there, because he was a little involved in when Prabhupada came. So we started the temple. We leased a storefront. All the temples were storefronts in those days. The 26 Second Avenue, 518 Frederick Street in San Francisco, then we rented this place, 5364, something like that, Pico Boulevard in Los Angeles. And that was in about August of 67. And then Prabhupada was in India at the time. He had his heart attack or stroke in Los Angeles. He went then to India for recuperation, took a few of his disciples with him. And so he wrote us a letter, and we informed him that we'd come to Los Angeles. There's a nice story, just an aside. There's a wonderful story that Rukmini tells that in New York, behind 26th Second Avenue. How many have gone to 26th Second Avenue in New York? Wonderful. Yes, it's good to see that temple. Well, 26th Second Avenue is a storefront, but then there's a building behind that, and Prabhupada had his apartment. If you read the history also, you know that there was a building. Prabhupada had his apartment on the second floor. So there was a little meeting of all the devotees, and Prabhupada was there and all of his disciples, many of his disciples, I guess. And so Prabhupada said, I want all of you to open temples. And that was our Sankirtan in those days. We didn't have any books except Prabhupada brought the Bhagavatam, so the three Bhagavatams, the first canto. And then there was a few Back to Godhead magazines and Easy Journey to Other Planets. But otherwise, we didn't really have Ishopanishad. We didn't even have Bhagavad Gita. So that's how sparse it was in terms of the literatures. And there was no Sankirtan, no Harinam. Harinam had not been invented yet. So that was a joke. I'm sorry you didn't laugh. But so Harinam was later. And of course, no book distribution. What else is prominent? No. There was deity worship of sorts, but not really, not full deity worship. So open a temple was the main instruction for Sankirtan, for spreading the movement, for serving Prabhupada, giving a serious service. So Prabhupada said, I want all you to open a temple. So Rukmini, she must have been about 16 or 17 years old. She wasn't very old. I never asked her, why did her parents let her join at such an early age? So she was sitting in the back. She raised her hand. She said, even the girls, Swamiji? And Prabhupada thought for just a second, and then he said, yes, even the girls. So this was the early theme. So we opened a temple in Los Angeles. Three of us went down. We drove from San Francisco and started that place, as I said, August, and then Prabhupada was in India. Then he came in about March. He returned to the United States. I think he went to San Francisco first, but you can see the chronology in Mukunda Maharaj's book. And so a bunch of them came down from San Francisco, Shamsundar, Murari, Mukunda. Some of them, those three at least, maybe one other. And we all painted this. We got an apartment. I think Mukunda found it. And then we just quickly painted it in one day, I think. We painted it white inside. Instead of cleaning, we just painted over everything. So Prabhupada was staying in that apartment. So he hadn't seen the temple yet. We received him, and he was staying in the temple. So I came to drive him to the temple. I got a job in order to pay for the rent and the brahmachari. I was paying $100 for the rent and $100 for the brahmachari to manage. So Prabhupada, that's another story also. So Prabhupada, I went to pick him up, and I had a nice new Volkswagen, so I took Prabhupada in the car, and it was raining, so I was really straining to see out the window, and when I got there, I realized, oh my God, I forgot to turn on the windshield wiper. I was so nervous. So then we got out of the car, we started to enter the temple, and Prabhupada said, so you will give class? Yeah, I was shocked at this, you know. And, you know, as I said, I was already, like, nervous from driving Prabhupada, and then he just put me on the spot like this, and I was like, it just, I couldn't imagine the concept. So, because Prabhupada, this was his first time visiting us, so I said, no, Prabhupada, I think you give the class. That was my understanding. So then he said, you can give the class. So notice the question first, and then a statement. You can give the class. So then I protested. I said, well, Swamiji, I think you should give the class. And they said, no, you give. So I've always marveled at that. Question, statement, order. There was no, after that, I had no choice. So I had to give the class. And, well, the sort of the end of the story is I was giving the class. I had this idea that I could prove the existence of God somehow. In my 22-year-old brain, I was thinking. So I was going on and on about nothing from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, nothing like that. And in about the middle of the class, Prabhupada interrupted, and whatever I had said was like completely wrong. He corrected it, you know, completely wrong in terms of Krishna consciousness. And he corrected and he said, continue. I know now very well for decades that it was not a good class. It wasn't based on Shastra. But Prabhupada was so kind. Later he wrote, he says, I have, Dayananda gives a very good class, I have heard. But that was in, he wrote that in 1968, so I think he would have revised his opinion over the years had I not improved. Anyway, so the other, one other?
I'll do one.
You do one, okay.
I can just move this, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I think this is good enough, isn't it?
It is good.
Yeah? Well, this story I like to tell because it was dramatic. I was trying to help run a school there in Vrindavan, and Hari Kesh was the Prabhupada's secretary at the time. And as I was walking by Prabhupada's rooms, he stopped me and said, you know, I don't think Prabhupada's very happy with the way you're running this school. He said, you should become like a guru to these children. So I thought, well, I don't know about that. I said, I don't think that's right, but anyway, I've got to go. I made some excuse and I went upstairs. At that time, we were in the third floor of the guest house in one big room. That was the school. So I went upstairs and was thinking, why did he say that? You know, what was that all about? And then a few minutes later, somebody came running up the stairs, there's three flights of stairs, El Brahmachari. He was completely out of breath. And he knocked on the door, and gasping, he was saying, Prabhupada wants to see you right away. So I was thinking, I'd never been summoned before by Prabhupada about anything. And so the first thing I did is I looked in the mirror to see if I had tilak, because I had heard that if you didn't have tilak, that wasn't a good way to go before the spiritual master. So I checked my tilak, and then I ran down the stairs, went into Prabhupada's room, offered my dandavats, and then when I got up, he was looking extremely serious. You know, his lips were turned down like that, and he said, so, you think you're a guru? I said, what? I don't think that. I never said that. And then I saw Hari Kesh. I said, he said that. I was desperate not to be. So anyway, so then Prabhupada turned to Hari Kesh and he said, so what is this? So then Hari Kesh launched into some kind of explanation. But Prabhupada didn't care for it. He just kind of went like that. waved him off. And then he turned back to me and he said, you are not a guru. I said, I know. He went like this, which meant, shut up. You are not guru. And he said, after he told me to shut up, he said, you are not guru, I am guru. You are the experienced disciple. You are teaching the inexperienced, but you are not guru. Is it clear? And I said, yes, Prabhupada. And then he just went, you know, he sort of dismissed me. And then later on, anyway, you could take the meaning of that any way you like, whatever it means. I'm not telling it to make any philosophical point. But anyway, I was dismissed. And then later, Hari Kesh came up, running up the stairs, and said, I'm sorry I got you in so much trouble with Prabhupada. I said, well, maybe it's a past life thing. I don't know. So that was my, I was thinking, you know, now Prabhupada thinks I'm some kind of maniac that thinks he's a guru. But anyway, it's now 5:59. I think our time is up. Did you want to tell one more?
I just wanted to say that Rulas has told me this story. He every 5 years he forgets he told me, so I've heard it, you know. But that aside, no, I heard him tell this story before. But I just wanted to comment that some devotees, maybe on the internet or somewhere, but they think that if Prabhupada chastised somebody, that means that person was not inferior in some way, and oh, Prabhupada corrected them, and that they make something out of it. But I think it's important to understand that when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, that there's discussion about Mahaprabhu's intimate associates that received chastisement, and then what is that, Pundarik Vidyani? I forget the devotee. Yeah. Who was hankering for, he was chastising Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for, you have never chastised me, so I'm not your intimate. Damodar Pandit.
Yes, because there was a young boy who had a beautiful mother who
had a beautiful mother. I'm thinking of Jagannathan Pandit, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that's what I was. Thank you, Prabhu. I was waiting for you earlier to help me with some verses. I needed to be reminded of some verses. Yeah, exactly. So yes, I just wanted to comment that, you know, please don't think that, don't think any less of Rupa.
What Rupa, you could make up for it by telling a story about how the Prabhupada told him when he said about the design.
Oh, okay. All right, I will.
I mean, you tell that story, you were there.
What was it? We have more time, really?
Yeah.
It said, and then I was told that I read the schedule, and it said talk is from 5 to 6, and prashadam is from 5:30 to something. I thought, okay, there's an option. If you don't like the talk, you can just go. Yeah.
So.
Well, that's your
option.
Yeah.
Oh, should I tell that? Okay. Well, Prabhupada used to circumnavigate in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Temple, Prabhupada, when he'd go for his morning walk. Oh, right. He's going for a morning walk, and he would circumambulate the temple. And As we rounded the corner at the front entrance, there was some kind of unusual looking pattern in the stonework, and Prabhupada spotted it right away, and he said, ah, just see, they have given you the rejected stone. and the rejected stone, he called it. And then Hari Kesh wants to do an explanation how, no, it's a pattern, Prabhupada, it's a pattern. And Prabhupada said, it's rejected stone, they've cheated you. And Hari Kesh again began to explain how it was a pattern. And then finally Prabhupada just looked at him kind of like with sort of a look of, I don't know, I would say disgust. Maybe it wasn't disgust, maybe it was just irritation. I don't know what it was, but he looked at him and he said, yes, he said, it is a pattern. He said, it is a clown's pattern and you are the fool. But it took me a while. It took me some years later to when he said it's a clown's pattern, you know, like court jesters always wear some kind of very colorful patchwork clothes, and he just, it's a clown's pattern and you are the fool. And then Hari Kesh started laughing wildly, you know, because that was their, some kind of thing about their relationship, that he would try to explain things to Prabhupada which were usually the wrong explanation, and Prabhupada would chastise him, you know. And all the rest of us that were on the walk, while this was going on, you know, we sort of fell back, you know, because it reminded me of this line from Bob Dylan. Oh. The man next to me, his head was exploding. And I was praying the pieces wouldn't fall on me. You know, we didn't want to be anywhere near this run-in. But that was the nature, Prabhupada's nature. You, your turn. I don't know. It's probably completely different now.
You got banned from India 100 years ago.
Well, it was long, yeah. 30 years ago.
Okay, I'll tell one briefly. This is not about me. It's sort of one of my favorite stories. It's become one of my favorite stories. It's very brief. It's something I read online recently that Guru Kripa, you know, sorry, Guru Kripa went to Prabhupada, gave him the receipt for $108,000 that his men had collected, and it was to be used for the Vrindavan temple. So he was reporting to Prabhupada. So he came in, the sannyasi, gave this receipt to Prabhupada, paid his obeisances, and Prabhupada said, "Why are you wearing that color? This is not our color." So but I just love that. I may not be saying the story exactly properly, but Prabhupada bypassed the check, $108,000. Although Prabhupada asked for a plaque to be put on the Vrindavan temple, acknowledging Guru Kripa and Yashodanandan's contribution. But in front of the spiritual master, we can't buy the spiritual master. We can't buy our way in to see Krishna. Or it's up to Krishna, it's his mercy, spiritual master's mercy. I love that.
No, but I thought that you should tell about the responses to it. That's one of the funniest bits.
Well, I didn't want to be negative. But yeah, the one devotee was, and there were responses, this was on Facebook, one devotee said, "Oh, Guru is heavy," you know. But then the other ones were like, "Yeah, I've noticed that the colors are really off these days." You
know? Kind of missing the point.
Yeah, I felt that was missing the point. So, some others. Are we going?
I think we should.
Should we stop?
I think so.
What do you think, Prabhu?
Can you tell a Watsaka story?
Watsaka.
Like how you first.
Oh, there's one story I really love is that Prabhupada was so quick on the uptake, the response. What do you call that in New York? The comeback. So he had an amazing ability for a comeback. You know, you say something, an objection, like anything, like, you know, Prabhupada, I never said that. You know, he just wouldn't take an excuse, especially. But in other cases, just his wit, you know, he would come back. So the story is that we just, everyone's been to the Watsaka, most people have been to the Watsaka temple in Los Angeles. So we just got that temple. And I'll tell kind of the backstory just briefly. that Garga Muni and Prabhupada and I were waiting for the realtor to show up. Anyway. I used to remember his name, but we don't know. So we're waiting for him to come, and Prabhupada sort of put his cane, knocked his cane against the wall. He said, "What construction is this? They have this stucco construction in Los Angeles. It's very typical in Los Angeles." So he knocked on there, and then the door opened, and he had knocked just outside of the minister's office, which is now the restaurant, a part of it. And the so Prabhupada, when he invited us in, and Prabhupada started to speak to him, I was really impressed. I was always impressed, but I was really in sort of an awe that Prabhupada was speaking to him in such a way that he was really communicating with this minister, a Christian minister, and but not in the sort of Krishna consciousness language that we're used to. You know, it was very sort of, he had assessed the audience and he was speaking to him very nicely. So in that way, Prabhupada sort of endeared the minister. All right, I'll go and I'll tell more. So there were two churches, Methodist churches, and they had rejoined their congregation, so they wanted to sell one of the churches. So we went and saw both of the churches, and we decided we liked the one on Watseka, the one that's the temple now. So then we went across the street, and there was an apartment, I guess, that was used by the church. So we were talking in the apartment. There was a realtor, there was the minister, and Prabhupada, and Garga Muni, and I. And Prabhupada started to negotiate. He said, well, I think one of the first things he said, well, we're poor as church mice. and then he said, and you are serving God, we are serving God, and so we could ask you to give it to us. But we won't do that. We won't go to that extreme. So he was sort of hinting like that, negotiating. And the minister said, oh, no. He said, I don't decide these things. It's up to the board of trustees. So then Prabhupada, now I'm paraphrasing, but Prabhupada basically said, well, you represent us with the trustees. Can you imagine that? Prabhupada was converting him to our financial representative. So that amazed me that Prabhupada was negotiating. So then fast forward, we decided we're purchasing, we signed the papers, arranged for the loan and everything. We were gonna take possession maybe in a few weeks or a couple of weeks, something. So Prabhupada wanted all the devotees from the temple to come and see walk through the temple. So the devotees went on procession from La Cienega, 1975 La Cienega, which is not too far from the Watseka temple. It probably would take 20 minutes or half an hour to walk, I guess. And so then here we have all the devotees in the temple and Prabhupada leading everybody around, seeing all the rooms and what can be done in the temple, the kitchen, everything. So then Prabhupada went into one room and all the disciples are behind him. And then from the opposite end of the room, there was a door and out the door came the minister. And he came up to Prabhupada and he said, he complimented Prabhupada on his disciples. He said, oh, you have such nice students. And Prabhupada immediately said, yes, you can also become. So quick, Prabhupada was so quick.
Okay, your turn. We have to win.
We have to sell some. He's saying we have to sell some books. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I never saw it, but by the time I got there, he was gone.
Well, Vishnu Jain played it. I don't remember very well, him playing it. But it was up, the organ, I think the playing of the organ was up near Prabhupada's quarters, where Prabhupada's quarters are now. So it would be right next to his, where we built his quarters.
How much is your book?
Yeah, everything is $20, but... Here. If anyone has 20, we'll give it all to you. No, each one of these is 20. Babaji Maharaj, Without Fear, and this one is called the Perfect Society, Dayavarna Ashram. And this one, as I said, I'm giving it free of charge. I have somebody who's donating them free of charge. And, however, there are a limited number of copies, so please be sure that you really want it. It's not that you're just excited about getting something free. Also, if I run out and you give me your address, I'll send them to you. Or you can get a PDF copy as well if you give me your email, I'll send you a PDF. So, yes, we'll be right here, right now, I guess. Is that appropriate?
Please. Yeah, that's good. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Dayananda Prabhu ki jai. Rupa Vilas Prabhu ki jai. Anyone would like to have a book, you can come over there.